This is Cultivating Place, conversations on natural history and the human impulse to garden. From North State Public Radio in Northern California, I'm Jennifer Jewell. Today we're joined by Nicholas Hernandez, also known as Nicholas Hummingbird. Nick is an indigenous Californian from Southern California. He is a plant lover, a partner to his wife, and a father of a new young son. Nick is an educator at heart, and he is a tireless voice and agent of change, advocating for California's native plants, animals, and landscapes. In his own words, they need his and all of our voices. Nick joins us today via Skype from his home in Southern California. Welcome, Nick.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I would like to start with you telling us about your earliest influences in life that led you to being a plant person and a gardener and a nature lover, Nick.
Well, that all started at an early age, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. I had an affinity for growing plants. It started with a vegetable garden initially, as something to do while I was going through some pretty traumatic life experiences as a young person. Parents split up, so I kind of escaped to that, and it was noticed by people in my family, the affinity or the solace I found with plants, and I started to be exposed to a lot more, especially natural places and nature, essentially, in Southern California. My great-grandparents were the helm of all that. They knew how to use all the plants for everything. We're talking medicine, food, materials. I would spend a great deal of time with them over the summers when I was out of school, and a lot of knowledge was passed on non-verbally just by doing things, watching them, and it's really held on to this day.
Where in Southern California were you raised, and were your grandparents and great-grandparents?
We moved quite often, every couple of years or so, and the main hub of my childhood was in Riverside, also out in the Palm Springs area. It's also where my great-grandparents resided, over by Idlewild and in the mountains, the Santa Rosa Mountains there.
Were both your grandparents and your great-grandparents influences in the plant education?
It was both. It was at my grandma's house that I had like the vegetable garden in the backyard. And then the more knowledge in terms of the California native plants came from my great-grandparents on my dad's side. I am Kuya from the Riverside area and also Apache from the Jicarilla, northern New Mexico. We also have some family and relatives in the Chumash community. And also, like, that's my dad's side. My mom is white, European. So those two worlds are always kind of clashing at times when it comes to culture and, of course, history and all that.
Definitely, definitely. When do you remember becoming most aware of the native plants around you?
After spending time with my great-grandparents and just being out in nature, going back without them, and also after they've passed, growing up, I was living with my mom. I'd go out in Riverside prior to like the huge development that we see today, and a lot of it was still natural. A lot of the plants were consistent with what I knew, and so I just would run around. You know, my dad got me into mountain biking. I got into a lot of hiking, and that was a way for me to connect to my dad, even though he wasn't there. He was over in Los Angeles, you know, to kind of, you know, and do things that remind me of him, my grandparents, and also at the same time, just kind of getting out away from a toxic environment. And that's what I really remember. And this is an elementary school. We're talking 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th grade on the fringes of Riverside City. But going into middle school towards the end of elementary school, all that area was destroyed. Thousands of houses were built. All the native plants were just systematically destroyed, along with the animals. We're talking the horned lizards, or they call them the horned toads, the rattlesnakes, the plants, the birds, the water resources, all this. Losing my family and having a fragmented family and seeing how even what was left of my family was incredibly toxic and dangerous and hurtful. But as a young person, you're susceptible to it. So you find another world, and that world was nature for me. And it was the plants and taking solace with what I related to, what I knew in terms of positive you know, affirmation, and seeing that taken away is just like, you know, you kind of feel like, what's the point of caring about anything?
And describe the journey through that and into the advocacy that you have taken on today.
When I saw all these beautiful places destroyed, everything I knew and loved and everything I basically retreated to, right? And that had a huge impact. It devastated me as a kid.
Yeah.
It left an empty part of me. And my mom was in the real estate business, so she was getting houses and selling them and doing all this and that, and I was a part of that, and I was remembering walking these neighborhoods where I used to walk prior to development and just remember where everything was. It was a house with grass and a parking lot, and that hurt. And so I went on, moved to another part of Riverside, and in middle school was between two different places, both Riverside, and then I moved out to Whittier, California. Moved again to Orange County, lived there for a little bit, went to high school, moved to another part of Orange County, finished high school, lived with my mom for a little bit in an area that we know as Ladera Ranch, and that was an area that was beautiful, undeveloped, and of course it happened again. Now it's a huge center of more development and thousands of more houses, and just learned to stop caring about plants and stop caring about these beautiful natural things. Because I felt like if I loved them and wherever I went to them, they were going to get destroyed. So what was the point? And as a young person, you really aren't empowered when you have parents who are, you know, of course, trying to deal with day to day, and you have a family and a culture that is something that, you know, some people know, some people don't know, some people don't feel like they can learn their culture, like it's something that was generations back. And so that left a gaping hole, because the whole childhood, I grew up thinking I was Mexican. And that's the way our family just said, you're Mexican. It's easier to get by and just say that instead of having to describe and who you are, what your tribe is. Why don't you know your culture? Why don't you know this and that? And that's difficult, too, as a young person, because you really don't know who you are. You're just kind of gravitating and just in the notion that you think you know who you are. Mm. And you think you know you care about stuff, and then you see that stuff taken away. I finally had enough of seeing things happen and me caring about them and nothing being done. The hope and the wish is always that somebody's going to do something. So I've really had to build myself and what I believe in and care enough to really make a stand and try to make my own way, because even in my own advocacy, I make a lot of people upset.
Where would you say was the turning point at which you went from being kind of numb to all of this loss and devastation of these landscapes that you were attached to? Mm-hmm. Where did you move to the point of saying, okay, these are my people, these are among my community of people, and mm-hmm. these are the landscapes and plant communities that I am going to fight for?
So that all came after you know, a bout of drug abuse, substance abuse, you know, alcohol, drugs, And that came at a cost to me, because turning 18, going into the world, graduating high school, trying to get into college, and trying to navigate the world in a way that I thought, like, I wanted to be rich and successful, because that's all I knew. And that broke down really quickly, because I was coming from a shaky and oftentimes without a foundation. And when you don't have a foundation, you know, you come from a lot of hurt, there's not healing, you come from a lot of abuse. You know, you either perpetuate it or it basically keeps you down in a way that you can't cope. You know, I tried suicide multiple times because I was ashamed. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't turn to my parents. I couldn't turn to people, even professionals. You know, it wasn't feeling like they were really caring. And so I went through this whole navigation of things, became homeless on the streets of LA, bounced around, you know, lost jobs, lost relationships, lost friends, lost people, lost family. And you know, in that loss of like so much, I got an opportunity to go to a rehab, you know, for drug, alcohol, but it happened to be a cultural rehab. They teach you about, you know, overcoming addiction and giving you, you know, resources to be able to do that. And but this one was a Native American one, and you know, people saw my dad and they're like, oh, you must be Native. And I never realized that, you know, that's what we were. And so there's some funding for me to go to the rehab. And I went through that, lived there for about a year. and they taught you about culture, and I was like, wow, like a lot of this stuff is how I feel, like intuitively.
Right.
And that humanity of what our indigenous culture teaches us is our relationship to the land, the water, and air. And when I talk about community, it's not about people and races of people. It's about an environment of plants and animals, air, water, land, past and future and current generations. That's community to us, and how that's something I always felt strongly about, you know. And a lot of this came full circle when I started going through that, you know, that first time ever, a healing and coming to terms with, you know, this is my life and this is what's happened to me while in it. And going forward, now I have some kind of morals and values and hope and inspiration and a real connection what that means, and realizing your history, because history is a nasty thing that nobody wants to confront, let alone talk about, and how that's not in the past, but it's playing out each and every day and in every generation, and somehow we have to overcome that while overcoming all the immense hurt from the past and the present. And so that's what I went through, a lot of that. And I found a teacher who taught me and took me in. He's in Malibu, and that's the Wishtoyo Foundation with Matiwaya, who is my teacher, my leader, somebody I respect dearly. Going through him, it just started off as helping and working. And then he started sharing with me, and it was building up trust. And that's something that we all have to do in our relationships, according to our culture and many cultures, through honor, sacrifice, and humility. And I think that creates a more holistic, you know, person. You know, you feel proud because you've accomplished something.
I'm Jennifer Jewell, and this is Cultivating Place. Among the garden ways that intrigue me, and always have, are those gardening ways of the first peoples of the world. Today we're speaking with Nick Hernandez, an indigenous plantsman in Southern California. His people tended, managed, and worked with the plants and landscape seasonal cycles and abundance for their food, utility, meaning, and spirit. His work is dedicated to being a voice of education and protection for these plants, these landscapes, and these ancient garden ways. We'll be right back after a break to hear more. Stay with us. Hey, it's Jennifer from Cultivating Place. Nick Hernandez is a 28-year-old indigenous plantsman from Southern California. He's sharing with us today the people and the plants and the places that have added to his rich cultural and ecological literacy. His dedication to being an outspoken voice of awareness and protection just lights me up. His clear insight into how the history and future of indigenous peoples is analogous to the history and fate of our natural areas really expanded my own thinking. Indeed, all of our relationships to our lands should tell us a great deal about how we see ourselves, right? And how we see the future of this great gardening globe. Now we're going to get back to Nick's gardening journey, which he in part attributes to the plants, which have saved him. How many times have each of us been saved by our plants? What resonates so much for me in what you're saying and what I know of your work is what a connective force nature is, and it needs to be, but it just is. And it's one of the things that connects me to anybody else I ever meet, is that love of the soil and the plants and the animals and the environment that we call home wherever we might be. Talk about the point in this process where the plants become one of your primary expressions of some of these things you are absorbing and imprinting for yourself as a man.
So we live in the world of, and I want to just say this, of instant gratification, where everything has to be done and done immediately. We don't enjoy the process. Where for me, I'm growing constantly, and it's not going to be overnight that I'm just somebody who's whatever anybody wants me to be or wherever I want to be. It's a process, and along that journey, you know, you're learning and you're going through hardship, but you're also overcoming. And you think of an acorn and the oak tree and the longevity of 1,000 years or more that oak tree can grow. But it all starts with the acorn, a little seed of hope, and it grows and it gets nurtured and it provides for people. And that's how my life has been when acknowledging history and my culture and my responsibilities to this world, our planet, each other, rather than my rights, my privileges. And so the plants are pure in every sense. The animals are pure in every single sense of their existence. The land has always owned us. We don't make our own food. We don't make our own water. We don't create our own air. Everything we're dependent upon is the health of the environment. Because now I realize that, and I'm standing up. Because those plants, these animals, this land has held my ancestors. It's going to hold the future generations. It's going to hold each and every one of us who are here now, because nobody can just go back to where they came from. We want to include people, and we want to be recognized. We want to be respected, and so do our plants, so do our animals, so do our land, water, and air, because this is our community. In my cultural journey, my spiritual, just human journey, I realized that these plants and these animals and all these things I described to you have been here for thousands of years with us, and they sustained us. They were always here. They give us our culture, our health, everything. Who am I to turn my back on them in a moment where they need us the most? We have a history of California that is unrecognized beyond the Spaniards. And when the Spaniards came here, for us, it was the end of our world, the end of our existence, the end of the beauty of a paradise that we shared and lived in for thousands of years. Now we have endangered species. Now we have landscapes that are ultimately destroyed. But I feel and have hope that they can be renewed. You had the first wave of genocide from the Spaniards and the missions, where we were essentially in concentration camps. Half of our population was annihilated. We just became slaves. We had little to no rights. You know, we were killed and replaced and raped, and it was business as usual. But the realization is now, when you talk about equality in the United States, we have rights all of a sudden, but they're not true rights because we're still oppressed people. History is still happening. There's privileges and non-privileges, and we just happen to fall in the bottom category. We're indigenous people, we're the least consulted group, and we are a true minority in our own land. We're only a couple million people out of, last I checked, almost 400 million people in the United States. So you think about that human history, and then you think about the environment. Well, how do these things correlate? Mm-hmm. And we are the human translation of the environment. We have rivers, lakes, streams, animals, mountains. All those things have a story, and those things teach you about place. They teach you about history. They teach you about morals and values and adherence and respect and love and admiration for them. And you think about the genocide that happened to us. It's still being perpetuated upon the plants, animals, and it's only accelerating, and it's getting worse. And that's why I said they need our voice. We had to tell the story of the environment in California. We had to tell our story in relation to the human perspective of what the environment is, because people just see a plant and that's a plant. But for us, it's medicine to heal your body. It's food. You know, it's a basket or a tool or a beautiful piece of clothing. And that's our story. And we're trying to tell that because that story is a linkage to the environmental crisis. And it's the same all over the world. You know, you do go to these different places. You have indigenous peoples. You are an indigenous person to the planet, wherever you come from. And so recognizing the struggles of people of color, especially indigenous people of the United States, African Americans, Hispanic, Latinos, you know, recognizing that and finding unity in our struggles. The healing that came for me was when I reconnected to the environment. Yeah. In a way that wasn't through hurt and sadness, but of love and admiration and respect. You know, I feel responsible for my existence on the planet. I feel responsible for the history of my ancestors and whatever memory and pride and honor and dignity and humility is left from their memory and in the present, because it's all relevant that we don't live in the past. We're people of the present and the future, but we look to our past for a foundation to help us, you know, keep that mind that there is a future. And trying to translate that and represent that to a community or to a people who have come here and they're lost as well, you know. We're lost in what happened to us and trying to find ourselves again. And there's a lot of people in this country who are just lost because they have no roots. They have no standing or ability, because that's what colonization does, is it erases you. It erases the landscape, so you can't relate to the landscape. And therefore, you can't really know what it is that you are or where you're at. And I hope and pray that one day that's totally changed.
Yeah. Describe for listeners, Nick, some of the work that you have done at the Autry Museum, at the Native Plant Nursery, the Hahamanga Nursery, and some of your own personal outreach as you move forward. You're a parent for the first time, and that, as much as planting a tree, is such an act of hope.
Hope is a very fragile thing in our world because given the current political situation, given history and what we're all up against, you know, I myself as a young person, I dream of owning a home, but I know it's not reality for me unless something really is in the stars, you know. And that's a common tale amongst our youth and all youth, is a future that is uncertain. So my thing is to keep hope. And that hope for me is doing something, whether it makes a difference or not, at least the active, conscious act of doing something allows me to put in what I believe is there's energy in the world, in the universe, that if you will something and you want something to happen and you put your intentions that are good and pure into it and your sacrifice, it'll happen. And that's what happened with the nursery. There's a saying that I really believe in: be the change before you see the change. The nursery started as a place where I could grow native plants from the area, educate people about the native plants in a way that they are learning about history, giving them a sense of hope because, you know, we're still here. We've overcome a lot and it's not over, but hey, we've made it through what I hope to be the worst of it. You know, here's some tools to do something about some of these issues like global warming and the environment changing. You know, everybody hears about that and they feel apathetic, and I think that's the greatest weapon of mass destruction. Don't be like that. Every little thing matters. And when we pray, we don't pray to our Creator, our God, to take our problems away. When we pray, we give offerings. We do it in a beautiful place. Any place that we want to be, that's our church. And that's how we looked at the land. Everything was a church. I pray for the strength, the wisdom, the ability to overcome and make a difference. And the nursery came up. That was my dream. It was not what most nurseries are. And, you know, we had volunteers come through. And my main thing was to honor these people who were giving me their time, take into account what point they are in their life and what can we do together. You know, what are the issues, you know, the environmental issues or concerns that you have? You know, we talked about that. We have a world that is seemingly beyond our grasp that we can't save or fix or do something about. We're like, well, let's sow some seeds. Let's grow some plants. Let's plant them. Let's advocate for them. Let's educate people about them. Let's tell their story. Let's be their story because we're them and they are us. And we go out. We grew over 25,000 plants in a couple of years. We got all those plants planted. And now it's just this tiny little rinky-dink nursery in the middle of Pasadena, and you can think that can just be done anywhere.
Right.
And of course, if it didn't continue because of a lot of politics, but for those 2 years, we touched and changed the perspective of thousands of people who are now interested with native plants, and they feel more connected to a place we all call home.
What does Hahamanga mean?
So that's a Tongva name. The Tongva territory is basically essentially the Los Angeles basin. Many people don't think that the Tongva people are still along with a lot of other California Native people. And there's a notion that we're all gone, but we're still here. And in that recognition and protocol of honor and respect, you know, this place was named for the village site that was there. And how cool is it that that meaning of that word meant fruitful valley, plentiful water, you know, basically an abundance and a paradise. Over the many years, that area that we were operating in has been mismanaged, but still it somehow hangs on. We have oak trees in there that are hundreds of years old. You have a riparian area full of endangered species of birds. And so in that story, you know, Hahamanga talks about all that.
You are also very involved at the Autry Museum and their native plant gardens.
So, you know, there's a bunch of grants that are kind of floating around. Some of them went to the Autry, some went to the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles. Los Angeles Natural History Museum did some great stuff. They did a native plant garden, and that's a place for people to go learn from the science perspective. But the Autry did something totally different, and something that I and many others, especially our elders, have been doing for years, and that is advocating through our perspective as indigenous people, the human story of the environment. And I was very honored to be a part of that. I'm very honored to still be a part of it. And what we're doing is we're trying to implement our culture, how that's the key to restoring the environment, the plants, and the health and the benefits of it, because humans are part of the environment. And simply saying that the land needs to be left alone and just protected like a museum, and you can just look, but you don't really touch, and you definitely don't go in and participate or walk through, is totally false, because that erases our entire history, our entire existence.
Yeah.
And in that, we try to tell our story of, like, and the Aachi has done that. The garden that they have outside, although it is small, tells a story of the environment, because in there you have, you know, the human translation, like I said, that we were talking about how we use the plants, what the plants are used for. People will trip out when a willow tree is made. It can make aspirin and yerba santa and creosote. These different plants can help cure cancers and sicknesses. And you know, these are just things that are growing that we may have taken for granted and just bulldozed, like we did in Riverside and Orange County, and continuously doing all over Los Angeles County. And that's something that I'm really proud to be a part of. And I maintain the garden, the health of it, the plants, because when you plant a garden, you don't just walk away. You take care of it. It needs your love and affection. And that's the way it is. It's a living entity that you're a part of. And so, what you do is you benefit from the plants and the medicines and everything. And also the plants benefit from you.
Right. And so describe that garden visually, Nick.
When you go out in the garden, you're met with a screen that has a bunch of us talking about native plants and who we are and what we do. And you go out and immediately there's plenty of water. You know, there's a waterfall and there's a pond, and you got all this lush, beautiful vegetation. And how ironic that that is right, like, catty corner next to the LA River that has been destroyed and channelized, and was a direct comparison to that garden. And how we look at that garden and people see the butterflies, the birds, the beauty of the flowers and all these beautiful plants, the smells, and you're next to the 5 freeway, and then next to the 5 freeway is the LA River that used to be that. And I think that can try to put that into perspective for people mm-hmm. to understand that this is what California was. So when you walk into the Aachi, you're met with the cowboy Western stuff, which couldn't have been any more of a front to us as indigenous peoples, but that's what it is. And you go downstairs and it's like, you know, it's all native. And it's kind of the way it is, because upstairs it's all the Western, you know, American, but it's all built upon the foundation of us. And we've been here for thousands of years. We're underneath your feet everywhere you go, or we're next to you, and we're above you. And when you go downstairs, you go down and you have two exhibits. One's about our baskets through a woman, Mabel McKay, who is incredibly important to the Native community, how she was such a huge driving force of culture. And I'm really grateful that they chose to honor her and have her story told. And then the other side, you have human nature, which is, you know, where you go through and you look at all the artifacts. We also hear the stories, you see the videos, and you learn about these issues, and you have the garden. But that garden tells a lot, and that's just what I think about it when I go in there, because you're met with different plant communities, like the water, the riparian, coastal sage scrub, the oak tree, some of the desert, and you just kind of navigate, and it's cool to see people see how they react to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always everybody always loves the water, and how important that is, that you need water as a human being. You know, you're born in water, you're kept in water until you come into the world, and how you need it throughout your life to sustain you. And that immediate, everybody loves the water, the smell, the sights, the sound. So
you maintain that garden, and then mm-hmm. you also are a very active voice at other cultural organizations and events. Being this voice of advocacy, talk a little bit about your work with, say, the Chafee Communities Cultural Center and your recent participation in the USC Visions and Voices series, Nick.
The Chafee's Cultural Center is a place where it's in a big development, a bunch of new houses, and there's an old church that's on the site. It's over 100 years old, I believe. Well, the reason why I came into it, because I have an elder, a teacher, somebody I really admire, and and to honor them and do it in a good way, to show them that they are cared for, they are loved, and they are respected. And not only that, but they're acknowledged and we're grateful for them. And so I asked my elder Barbara, like, because she was there and she's been working there for many years, and she's had the support of many of the local colleges and students to do stuff, and had a little Tongva village because they wanted to tell a story about history, especially to that area. So you had a lot of the settler stuff, a lot of the agricultural industry, and of course all the stuff that destroyed our environment. That's all well and prominent, and that's the way it is a lot of places. And he had a couple of our traditional homes, which are our dome structures. Many different people call them ops, kichas or quiche, and that's our home, and that dome structure is the strongest structure in the world. But how it was all made out of natural materials, and those two were there, and I felt it was an injustice that not only were they there, but they were kind of forgotten, like the land. They had some of our cultural stuff on display, but it wasn't truly being told without the plants. Mm. And it wasn't truly a place for us to connect to because it didn't have the plants. And so I asked my elder Barbara if she would like me to help her, and she would just guide us and tell us what she wanted, and I would make it happen with a group of other people, and we planted it up, we take care of it, we weed it, we water it. We want it to be a beautiful place where a lot of our people can't go out and gather a lot of the fruits and medicines from the plants, because a lot of times they're in areas that are inaccessible, such as private property, and in places where there's fear because of law enforcement and harassment from national parks, national forest, and other county or public lands. And so here's a place that we can come in that we healed it, and in that process of healing that land, we healed ourselves. And now it's a beautiful representation of the landscape that many people are unaware of, and we have a role in that. And I was just there this morning. I planted 20 more plants, and it's a continuous thing, you know. And you know, the biggest thing for me was to plant an oak tree this morning in honor of my son's birth, because he's coming into a world, and that's what we do for our children, is we plant those seeds of hope into trees that are going to outlive their lifetime, but they're responsible for within their lifetime, and it's an insurance policy for their kids and so on into the future. And that's how we look at it, as a continuation of a future. We don't think of it as me right now, tomorrow, or maybe the next day. No, we're talking seven generations from now. And so that's how that really came into be. And, you know, just being an advocate all the time. You know, sometimes I have a big mouth and I'll say what's on my mind, but oftentimes I try to do it in a way that doesn't isolate people and doesn't isolate myself, or my truth is to be told. We need to make a difference, and that difference doesn't come from hiding about the things that are perpetually being carried out over and over again. And Instagram is that platform for me, where I started out just posting pictures as a photographic journal of my journey, my work, what I'd done. I never wanted to be what it is now, but it's evolved that way over time, and I feel responsible for it, and how I conduct myself and how I conduct, you know, the stories and how I share things, and it's become a tool for a lot of people to learn, and it's also inspired a lot of people to do similar things. And that's something that I'm really grateful for. Mm-hmm. And that's what's given me the opportunities to be able to speak and empower our youth, empower our children and all people. And I was given the opportunity to represent native plants, or that aspect of the environment, with the USC Visions and Voices. They wanted to do a panel and a hike to give people more acquainted through a grant that they received about the environment here in LA, because we are all very aware of the Arctic. We're all very aware of the rainforest, all of these far off places that we think need to be protected. You know, we neglect where we live. Our backyard is our environment. In your backyard, where you have a patch of grass or a patch of land, you know, that land is just as important as a patch of rainforest, but it's a different way. It's a different beautiful place from where you live. Because we have more plants and animal species here in the California floristic province than the entire continent of North America combined. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that. Yet we're destroying it and extincting things before we can even really care. And that's my trying to get in front of that. And so USC Visions and Voices put me on a panel with two other individuals who I have a lot of respect for, and who represent different aspects of our conditions and the environment. And my thing was to go up there, and if I'm going to be there, you know, I was grateful to be included in that. And there's those of us who are scientifically inclined, and those who people who are turned off by a lot of the scientific things. And when you go about it in a way that is very scientific, and we start talking about the names of plants in Latin and stuff like that, you know, you're only going to speak to a certain group of people who know that, and right. other people are going to feel left out.
Right.
And you cannot change an environment, or you cannot make a difference in this world if you're only including certain people, not all people. Because for me, native plant knowledge and environmental knowledge is a foundation. Everything I do is built upon that. But if you don't have that foundation and it's just a job or it's an interest, you know, you're never going to truly care, because you're not going to have that association that we all should have. And so we had a lot of people in the audience, you know, young people, older people, students, faculty members, public. It was a mix of all sorts of people, all different races and backgrounds, orientations, religions. And that's beautiful for me because, you know, you're all here on my land where I live, where I come from, and how I'm doing what I'm doing. And I'm hoping you can see that and recognize that as your responsibility as well, because we all have our future tied here. We all have our current situations. We're all tied together. And this earthquake comes and hits us, we're all going to be suffering.
Right.
And so teaching about, you know, giving people a different perspective, because I'm representing myself. I'm representing a community that's always ignored and always pushed to the fringes, that's been oppressed incredibly for the past few hundred years, and giving a perspective that it's not anger, like, you guys don't should go back where you came from. You need to do this. And people are oftentimes thinking that that's what we want to say to them. You know, sometimes I feel that way, but it's not realistic. And they're, you know, it isn't realistic. And in that, you know, it's more harm than good. The thing is, we need to come together.
Yeah.
Because we're at this point right now, in a point of human history that's never happened, where there's so many people in different places and so many things going on. We need to really slow down and look at the ancient places that we call home and what the blueprint is to live there. We can just represent that in human form. And we're trying to do that, and we're trying to be acknowledged, and we're trying to heal ourselves, and we're trying to heal the environment, because we are all connected.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people tripped out. You know, they were like, whoa, we don't know. We came here for this talk about wild LA. And first of all, wild is not a word that I use, let alone wilderness, let alone, you know, environment or nature. Nature is a perceived term in Western ideology or languages that is something separate from us. And our languages in indigenous California and many indigenous cultures around the world, there is no word for nature. It's described in every single thing that we talk about. When you talk about a word, or, you know, the power of a word, you talk about an animal or describing the wind or the ocean, that tells a story, and it's a story of reverence, not a story of that's separate from me. We're a part of it. Then when we spoke our languages, we didn't disturb the animals because it was calm. It blended in with the natural landscape and the noises that we hear. And that's what I try to explain to people on the hike as well. You know, we leave the city behind and we go to these natural places. We need to acknowledge these national parks, these national forests, as lands that not only that we lose and we're paying the price for losing because those are our sacred spaces, but looking at the landscapes and the houses and the buildings and all these things that in agricultural fields that we've lost, and how that used to be the national parks. I hope people can see that correlation and in there, you know, find the ability to start restoring the land that they live on, whatever little piece it may be, mm-hmm. and finding some justice in that, and also contributing to the environmental condition in terms of the better of it and the restoring and the healing of it, and also learning that nature and these beautiful spaces and places are not something you just go to. It's where you are. It's where you're at. It's all about your perspective. It's all about your willingness to bring it back. It's all about your willingness to acknowledge it and advocate for it. We have that responsibility together, that we stand up and we implement their revival, because it's our revival, and that's the revival of the human species being connected to a world that we can all come from.
I'm Jennifer Jewell, and this is Cultivating Place. Our guest today, Nicholas Hernandez, also known as Nicholas Hummingbird, is a plantsman of indigenous descent from Southern California. In a recent mission statement of sorts, he wrote, quote, "Every day I'm inspired by those who share an understanding, love, and relationship to nature, and what we all need as human beings to survive. I am one person. and I believe wholeheartedly in everything I try to accomplish for my people. People for me are humanity, plants, animals, air, water, land, and the continuation of all that. I am proud to be a father of a son who will grow up learning everything I have and building on that knowledge. As Nick says, the plants need his voice. As a gardener, I say, we all need voices just like his. We'll be right back after a break to hear more. Stay with us. Hey, it's me again, Jennifer. The thing I love most about this program are the connections I make with you, gardeners out there in and around the world. We're everywhere, and as more than one Cultivating Place guest has reminded me, our work and our human impulse to garden is important. It makes a difference to our mindsets, to our families, to our communities, and to our environments. Following your journeys in the garden, and this week hearing about the importance of plants in their places, this is what gardening looks like. This is what inspires me. If you and I haven't connected yet, follow the program on Instagram or Facebook and tell me what is important about place and plants to you. After all, the whole point of Cultivating Place is to have conversations about these things we love and that connect us. We're back now with Nick Hernandez, also known as Nicholas Hummingbird. Make sure to check out cultivatingplace.com this week to see gorgeous photos of plants and places and elders of meaning in his life. Okay, and there's some really cute baby pictures of his new son. What were the 20 plants that you planted this morning, Nick?
Oh, they're all different. They were just, some were white sage because we lost a lot of the white sage plants due to the summer. We had this garden. This garden is beautiful, and we had so many people wanting to take care of it that everybody wanted to water and do this, that it turns out that, you know, they killed them with too much love, a lot
right.
of these plants.
Right, we do. We so love too them much to water. Death, yes. And especially the sages.
People don't understand with native plants is that, you know, they thrive on the neglect to a certain extent.
Well, especially,
you know,
no
like
summer
the water,
water
and
right?
The care and the fertilizers. They don't need all of that.
No.
You know, but they do need our love and affection and, you know, us trimming them in a good way, using them, being with them, you know, and so that's another thing with the gardener. People are learning, you know, it's all a learning curve. And the worst thing to do is to really get on somebody for doing the wrong thing when they don't know what the right thing is. It's a teaching moment.
Right.
So a lot of people learn that, oh my gosh, all the white sages are gone. Well, this is what happened. You water too much. And so it's just replacing those. I planted a bay laurel tree. Mm-hmm. I planted an oak tree for my son, like I said.
What kind of oak did you plant?
A coast live oak.
Nice.
Whenever I landscape with the plants that would have been there, because that's where the soil needs is that connection to the plants that belong in that certain space. I know a lot of people want to plant redwoods down here in Southern California, and to me, it's just ridiculous.
Mm-mm.
But
mm-hmm.
not only do plants fit the palette, you know, and you know, you got plants in the desert for the reasons that they're there, and you have the plants that are here for the reasons that they are, and you know, why bring the desert here when you can go and enjoy the desert as it is over there and advocate and see the health of that environment and still keep the integrity of the environment that we live in here. And that's important when you start talking about plants.
So you have white sage, you have mm-hmm. coast live oak, you have the bay laurel, which is pretty, it's native all along the floristic province, I believe.
Yeah, it's got a long range in
right,
California.
Right, and then so what are some of the other backbone plants in that garden that you love?
So a lot of people, when they landscape, they want flowers, they want this and that. And that's cool and all, but that's not my thing. My thing is like the plants that nobody loves, and that's always the coyote brush, the mule fat, the sagebrush, the Southern California sagebrush. You know, these plants, and that's what I planted today along with some of the other ones, golden bush, yerba santa. All these plants, you know, they have medicinal uses, but they have huge habitat uses, you know. We're talking birds, butterflies, insects, pollinators, all these things. So I plant those plants that are always being destroyed in the landscape and looked at as abundant mm-hmm. because those are all the ones, like a lot of them are at the risk of extinction in the near future because of increased environmental impacts, not just the increase in temperature change, you know, the impacts of human development, all sorts of stuff, invasive plants, drought, you name it. I'm always keeping in mind wherever I plant plants, depending on the area. Okay, so we have a little space. We have this opportunity. There's land around. So I'll plant plants that give off a ton of seed. So hopes that they spread, you know. So if they pop up somewhere and somebody kills it, well, hey, you know, at least there's life trying to come back.
Right.
And there's an opportunity that when you disturb the soil and you pull out one plant, that five more will come up, I hope. And so that's always my way of looking at things. It's like, okay, where opportunities are beyond this opportunity, you know, in terms of making a difference. So
if you had three very specific actions you would like listeners to take in this coming growing season to become more rooted in this place we call home, what would those actions be, Nick?
Get to know the history. Get to know where you're at. I think that's the most important thing, is get to know where you are or where you occupy, to give you a sense of place of what it was. Because oftentimes, wherever you're at, and a lot of it, this goes for millions of people in California, is you don't know, because it's so drastically altered that it's just what it is to you right now. But it has a history, and we're talking thousands of years.
Yeah.
And in learning about that, maybe you learn about a village or the people who called this place home for thousands of years. And I hope you learn about them and you can recognize them. And, you know, when it comes time to, whenever you meet one, you're supportive. And you're not in awe, because the weirdest thing we get as Native people is like people romanticize us. And it's like, hey, I'm just like everybody else. You know, I just happen to care about stuff. You know, I'm not an environmentalist because that's what a Hokie Indian does. I'm an environmentalist because this is my humanity and it's your humanity too. This is where I'm living. You know, what was this place before? Was it a wetland? Because a lot of people actually live on wetlands, especially here in Southern California. So places that have been drained. Or some people live in oak woodland. And if you had the opportunity for the second one, after learning your history of where you live and what it was and the environmental story of it, you learn about what can you do to enhance it, or what can you do to maybe mitigate or give it some justice in terms of planting a native plant. And after planting that native plant, you know, you have a connection to that native plant, and it's a plant that would have grown there previously. And you know, maybe you can support a nursery nearby you that grows native plants, or you can grow your own and have that connection. And don't go for instant gratification of right away you want something. Go through the process. That's my second thing. And for the third thing, get out and hike. Expand your horizons. Hike and go into places. Go to these beautiful places here in California that we have, that the whole world comes to see, but very few of our own residents here actually acknowledge or go to. When you talk to a lot of the youth and a lot of high schoolers and people, you ask them how many of them have gone to the Redwoods. Most people have gone to Yosemite because for some term or another, that's a beautiful place, everything. But you, very few people go see the Redwoods or the giant sequoias, or even to the deserts to see the palm oases or the Channel Islands that we have off our coast. These immense, beautiful places that we take for granted, and the whole world comes here to see them. Well, we want to go see the rest of the world in terms of pyramids and Roman and European cultures and ancient, you know, cultures around the world. We don't do any justice to the ancient cultures that we have here that are living and continuing.
Yeah.
And I hope people can see that, because there's a lot of these places that we're going to lose: the Joshua Tree, the Redwoods, the giant sequoias. So my hope is go enjoy them while you can. And in that you go and you enjoy them and you see them and you're in the place and you see the beauty and how small you really are in this world compared to these other plants, I hope you can learn that fight and advocate for them. To see these beautiful things and fight and advocate for them, because like I said, they don't have any voices, they don't have any rights. You never know when something's going to be gone. You never know when you're going to lose a loved one or something that is incredibly important to you. And so it's important to enjoy and have an experience that is positive with it, and also be grateful for it, because you don't know what you've lost unless you knew it before. I mean, it's hard to know and care about it after it's gone.
Right.
And the stories and the lessons that come along with all that is also really important for human beings to understand and not to have regrets.
Thank you very much for being a guest on Cultivating Place today, Nick. It's been an honor to speak with you. I really appreciate your work in this world.
Thank you. Thank you. The beauty of this is it's not one person, it's all people that can take part of this. And you think about the more people get involved, it's not competition, it's a better world.
Nicholas Hernandez, also known as Nicholas Hummingbird, is an indigenous Californian from Southern California, a plantsman, a partner to his wife, and a father to their new young son. Nick is an educator and a tireless voice and agent of change, advocating for California's native plants, animals, and landscapes. In other words, for his community. In his own words, they need all of our voices. Without them, we have little relationship or roots in the places we call home. And without this, we often just don't know where we are or where we're going. Join us again next week as the conversations continue on the many ways we engage in and grow from the cultivation of our places. My greatest hope with this program is to expand each of our views on what gardening is, what a garden looks like, and who we identify as gardeners. I'm telling you, we're a powerful community of bright, caring people. We make a difference. Thank you for listening. To see photos of plants and places of meaning to today's guest, Nick Hernandez, visit cultivatingplace.com. While you're there, make sure you subscribe to the Cultivating Place newsletter so you can be among the first to know who upcoming guests will be and other, you know, quantum gardening stuff. Even better, share the program with others and join our community. Follow Cultivating Place on Instagram and Facebook. Share what plants are full of meaning for you in your garden and see and hear and be inspired by what this looks like to others of us around this great gardening globe. Cultivating Place is a co-production of North State Public Radio. The program is made possible in part by the Stanley Smith Horticultural Trust. Our producer is Sarah Bohannon. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Original theme music is by Matt Schiltz. Cultivating Place is distributed nationally by PRX, Public Radio Exchange. Until next week, enjoy the cultivation of your place. I'm Jennifer Jewell.